BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Lauren Laverne, and this is the Desert Island Discs podcast. Every week, I ask my guests to choose the 8 tracks, book, and luxury they'd want to take with them if they were cast away to a desert island. And, for rights reasons, the music is shorter than the original broadcast. I hope you enjoy listening. My castaway this week is the singer and actor Lea Salonga, one of the most successful performers the Philippines has ever produced. Her perfect pitch and prodigious talent were spotted early. She became a star in her own country before she hit double figures with a TV show and a hit record of her own. As a teenager, she planned to leave show business behind and become a doctor. But before she could finish her course at university, she was spotted by the team behind Les Miserables, who were on a global search for the lead in their new musical, Miss Saigon. She went on to win international recognition for her performance as Kim at the age of just 18, with an Olivier in London and a Tony Award on Broadway. She has made history many times. She was the first Asian woman to win a Tony for an acting role, the first Asian actor to star in Les Miserables, the first Filipino artist to sign a record deal with an international label, and the first person to voice two different Disney princesses, Aladdin's Jasmine and Mulan. This summer, she notched up 2 more landmarks in the same Broadway theatre where she began her international career. For the first time, she's playing a Filipino character on stage, and she was part of the first all-Filipino cast in Broadway history. But while she is accomplished at breaking boundaries, she's more concerned with keeping time. She says, "The only thing I thought about was just nail the song, nail the role, and that'll be enough. Don't think of yourself as the first anything." Lea Salonga, welcome to Desert Island Discs.
Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Lea, you have spent a lifetime on stage, performed everywhere and for audiences including the late Queen, the Oscars, back on Broadway recently here in the West End. What's usually going through your mind when you're up there in the spotlight?
I try to make my brain do the equivalent of, you ever see the movie Men in Black, where there's that thing, and to make them forget?
The memory zapper.
The memory zapper, exactly. So I kind of do that because you cannot give an identical performance from the night before. Even if you do the exact same thing, it's not going to be Groundhog Day. There's a lot going on, but what I try to do is just to make sure that that moment's emotional truth is played. And then hopefully that, you know, reaches the audience.
Well, Lea, let's get started. We'd love to hear your first disc. What is it and why have you chosen it?
It's Feed the Birds, sung by the incomparable Julie Andrews from the Mary Poppins film soundtrack. And there are so many popular songs that came from that one film. And just whenever Julie opens her mouth, it's like finely spun threads of gold. And you can almost see it as it's happening. And I've loved her as a musical theater and film musical icon pretty much forever, ever since my childhood.
And you've worked with her, you've met her.
And I've gotten to work with her a couple times. The first time I actually worked with her was when I met her. It was for a King and I album with her playing Anna and Ben Kingsley playing the King. And I was Tuptim and Peebo Bryson was Lunta. And I remember walking into a studio, and this was in Los Angeles. It was a Hollywood Bowl Orchestra and John Malcherry was conducting. And I remember going into the studio, meeting her, thinking I was about to disintegrate when I shook her hand and I said, "Hello, Miss Andrews." And she said, "Just call me Julie." And I was like, and a puddle on the floor, because she was just kind. And just her looking into your face, it was kind and lovely. And if you're a musical theater fan that loved her voice and still loves her voice, whatever you imagine her to be is exactly what she is.
Feed the birds, tuppence a bag, tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. Feed the birds, that's what she cries. overhead, birds fill the skies.
Julie Andrews and Feed the Birds from the soundtrack to Mary Poppins. Lea Salonga, let's go back to the beginning. You were born in the Philippines in 1971, but I know that you spent the first few years of your life in Angeles City in Pampanga. What are your memories of life there?
I remember living in Angeles City. It was a single level house and we had a big front yard and a big backyard, and she would host our birthday parties and her friends would come and her friends would bring their kids who were around the same age. I just remember balloons. I remember the food always being good. And I just remember my mother creating a very ideal childhood.
It was the year after you were born that martial law was declared.
I think living in the province was helpful, outside of the action, far away from protests and bombings and all of that kind of stuff.
I think it was your mom who spotted your talent for singing. You were very young, just three, but she felt you had something special.
She said that the lyrics weren't always right, but as far as melodies, those were things that were spot on really early. And she said that I would get up on the living room table and hold the end of a plug and use it as a microphone, as if I was having a concert. She saw that there possibly was something special to make of it.
And smart enough and motivated enough to actually do it, because it really was her who kickstarted your career. How did it happen? What did she do?
This one cousin, her name is Ria, she was very active with Repertory Philippines, which was the theater company I ended up making my stage debut with. She said to my mom, you'd better bring her to these auditions. They're looking for children for a production of The King and I, and I think Leia would be great for this. So I think the director saw that I was a very sassy child and loud and could sing. So with all those qualities, I got hired.
And is it true that she actually would have records pressed of you singing and take them shop to shop?
Yeah, I guess the light bulb went off in her head. I see potential in this child. So she booked recording studio time. She had a few units pressed of these vinyls, and they would be packaged, and she would go from one music shop to the next on this street called Raon in the city of Manila. There would be shop after shop after shop, and she would go to each one of them. Would you be interested in maybe having this in your inventory? This is my daughter, and this is her singing these songs. This is after she tried to shop it to recording companies, all of whom said no to her in her face. So she took matters into her own hands and marketed everything herself. And oh, the vindication happened when these stores started calling her and asking, would you please replenish our supply? Because they kind of disappeared and we are now out of stock. Very good business sense in this woman.
Leia, it's time for some more music. Your second choice today. What's it going to be and why are you taking it with you to the island?
This is Days and Days, sung by one of my favorite musical theater voices, Judy Kuhn, also another Disney princess who was the singing voice for Pocahontas. I've always regarded this woman as having one of the most perfect singing voices on the planet.
Days and days and days, that's how it happens. Days and days. Made of posing and bragging and fits of rage. And boys, my God, some of them underage. And oh, how did it all happen here? There was a time your father swept me off my feet with words.
Days and Days, Judy Kuhn. Tell me a bit about your father. How would you describe your relationship with him?
Interesting. I mean, I've always seen him as incredibly intelligent. He was a polyglot. He learned Russian in Russian club in university just because. He was one of those people. He spoke five languages. I barely can manage with two. Graduated one of the top in his class in university, but as my mom would say, did not have the best business sense. She had her street smarts. He was very book smart. According to members of his family, oh, he was such a star when he walked into the room, as in he walked into a room and all the very charismatic, which got him in trouble with women.
Yeah, so he and your mother never married?
No, they never did. There's a part of me that's glad about that.
It's time for your next piece of music, Lea Salonga. Disc number 3, what have you got for us and why are you taking it with you?
This is Billie Jean by Michael Jackson. When I saw the Motown 25 performance of Billie Jean, it made me stop and watch. And I remember not being able to move because it was lightning in a bottle. This was beyond talent.
Michael Jackson and Billie Jean. Lea Salonga, in 1989, a new musical was created. Miss Saigon was a retelling of Puccini's Madame Butterfly, and the producers were on an international search for someone to play the lead, Kim. Now, by this point, you were 17 and starting to move away from performing. You were actually at university studying with plans to qualify as a doctor. You resisted auditioning at first. Why?
Well, when you have parents that tell you this whole showbiz thing, it's fickle. They were being responsible parents and telling me you need to go to university. You need to make sure you have a degree. You need to make sure that you'll be able to take care of yourself as an adult. Exactly. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and as a 17-year-old, I've seen artists be popular one minute and then disappear the next. Mm. So those are things that shape your plans.
The audition process lasted a few weeks and it culminated with you being flown to London, and there you got the part. You'd had quite a sheltered upbringing and never been in a romantic relationship. Suddenly you were playing a sex worker who then becomes a single parent. How on earth did you prepare for the role?
Numerous ways, but one of the funniest was just watching my mother try to explain to me exactly what I needed to do. It's really uncomfortable. And I was not getting a lot of help from other members of the company either, because I would ask a question, what is it like to fall in love with someone? And the only answer I would get was, oh, you know when it happens. How is that helpful to me in in figuring out the mechanics of how I'm supposed to physically react to any of this? Until one day in tech, and I still wasn't really delivering what the production creative team wanted me to do. So finally, I think Nick Heitner had finally just had it. He's like, Leia, get off the bed. Just get off the bed. I'm like, okay. And I stood there in front of it. He got on it. Simon Bowman, who is playing Chris, is in the bed. And Nick demonstrates what he wants me to do. And good on Simon for being a really good sport, but good on Nick for finally physicalizing what the expectation was. And I think from there, that just kind of did everything. Because up until that point, it was, we need you to be really passionate. We need you. But as far as I was concerned, these are words that had no meaning.
You didn't have the context for it yet.
I hadn't been passionate. I had no concept. Mm. I had nothing. Even if I have the most gentle and protective leading man in the West End ever at the time, never once took advantage of his position. He was always, always protective and respectful. Mm. But I needed Nick Heitner to do that demo.
I think we better have some more music, Lea. Disc number 4. What's it going to be?
This is one of my favorite tracks. I definitely wanted to have music from home on this list. And this is a track called Chismis. Chismis, translating to gossip, is basically a sonic representation of what gossip is. It is chaotic. And it was created by an artist and a musical director and a composer named Ryan Kayubyab, with whom I've had the wonderful fortune of getting to work with.
Alam mo bang si sino yung pinsan ni? Hindi yon. Eh sino nga? Kilala mo si? Ayon ko marikong si. Siya nga, eh ano ngayon? Teka, teka, baka ikalat mo. Hindi ko sasabihin. Kanino man? Kanino man? Pexman. Pexman. Sige ka. Sige na.
Chismis. Ah, very good.
Ryan Kayubyab. Lea Salonga, Miss Saigon was an instant hit when it started in the West End, 1989.
Massive hit.
Rave reviews. You won an Olivier, transferred to Broadway, and producer Cameron McIntosh wanted you to reprise the role there. But when you arrived there, you did come up against some resistance because the Actors' Equity Association, they wanted the part of Kim to go to an Asian American actress. It was a bit of a storm. How did it feel for you to be at the centre of it?
I left the show in December of 1990, so not long before I was going to leave the show here. He said, so this is what's happening. We're going to try to bring you over to Broadway, and we're doing everything that we can to make this happen. But be aware that we may not make it happen. So he was just very matter of fact about it, called me and my mom into his office. And I said, you know what, for everything that you've done for me thus far, I really can't ask for anything more. I will make plans to maybe start drama school here in London if the Broadway thing doesn't work out. You know, don't worry. We're just so grateful for everything. And, you know, what happens? I'm in the Philippines. It's around mid-January. I hear a knock on my bedroom door. My father opens it. All he says to me is, you're going to New York. So much for my plan. I shouldn't just ever make plans, like
no,
ever.
I mean, literally, stop now. Yeah. Miss Saigon, it wasn't the only controversy connected to the show. It has in the past been accused of racism for its depiction of the Vietnamese people, misogyny because of the way women are portrayed in the show. How aware were you of the politics around it then? And how do you reflect on it now, I wonder? Is there a difference there?
I reflect on it in many different ways. I tried to shield myself from a lot of the controversy, especially during rehearsals, because my job was, this is a role, I need to do this, and that is that. Mm-hmm. This is the job I was hired to do. This is the task that I have at hand, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. Full stop. That's it. And as a couple of my friends have pointed out, if you look at things in context, we have to place it in a historical context. Women were not always treated so well. And this is a country in the middle of a war. And this is how women are treated.
Lea, it's time for your fifth disc. What are we going to hear?
Gymnopédie number 1 by Eric Satie, played by Philip Entremont. I was like searching for which version should I bring to the island. And I just liked the way Monsieur Entremont played it. It was just so calming and beautiful.
Gymnopédie number 1 by Eric Satie, played by Philip Entremont.
Lea Salonga, even though you left Miss Saigon with an Olivier and Tony Award in the bag, you have said that you struggled to find work for a while afterwards. What was going on?
Well, I remember my agent at the time wanting to send me out on auditions. And then there was one in particular for another show. He said, I'm going to send you out for this. And I said, I don't know if I'm the right vocal for this, because it was a much older, more traditional Broadway musical. 10 minutes later, he calls me back and he says, oh, they're not going to see you because you're Asian, because you're not the right ethnic background for this role. And I went, oh, it was quite an awakening, this realization that even though you have a Tony Award in your hand or all these other awards on your mantle, doesn't matter. At the end of the day, if you're not the right type, if you're not the right race, if you're not the right whatever, you're not even going to be seen to audition for something. But not long after that, I got a call from Cameron's office in New York.
This is Cameron McIntosh asking, again.
Yeah, asking if I could take a meeting with Richard J. Alexander, who was working in Cameron's office at the time, taking care of Les Mis on Broadway. And so I was in a conference room and Richard was sitting in front of me. And he said, we would like to cast you as Eponine in Les Mis. Would you be interested? And I'm like, absolutely. And I was, by this point, obsessed with Les Mis. The 3-hour and 15-minute version of it was in my head, locked in my head. Every single character, every single line.
So you were the first Asian actress to play Eponine.
Yeah.
And your performance in that role became the stuff of Broadway legend. And you played a couple of roles in Les Mis in the
I've
end.
Done.
Just
I've,
as well that you, yeah, you knew the whole thing.
I played the two dead girls. And there was a recent cast change in Les Mis on the West End. And the young woman who's playing it now, Old Friends, which is the show that I'm currently in, which is a brand new Sondheim review, is playing at the Gielgud right beside the Sondheim, which is where Les Mis is. And our rehearsals were happening in the same venue. So she came up to me and introduced herself, saying that she was going to be playing Eponine and that she just wanted to meet me. And so this beautiful young woman of color is getting to play this role. And so many young women of color have gotten to to play this role
and
now
to follow
as well.
In your footsteps. It's, what's that like for you? A Filipino performer that I know described you as the person who opened the door for all of us.
In the moment, I don't think about it. In the moment when Les Mis was happening, my only concern was nailing that song every single day. Sing the song well, and that'll be enough. And so many years on now, so many young women of color get to sing that song. And I'm thankful to Cameron's office. I'm thankful to Richard J. I'm thankful, obviously, to Cameron for daring to say, this is storytelling. Race is not involved. We're going to cast this person in this role. We think she'd be perfect. And that's the end of it. This was way before representation was a byword. When I was cast in that role, I didn't envision how important it would end up being.
It's time for your next disc, Leah. What are we going to hear?
I am a huge fan of BTS. BTS is a 7-member Korean pop group. They have sold out Wembley Stadium. And this track is one of my favorites. It's called Singularity. And it is sung by my favorite member of BTS, who goes by the name V. And even if you don't understand a lick of the lyric, I think you'll appreciate just the music. And it's really good music.
B BTS and Singularity. Leah, earlier this year, you co-produced and starred in the Broadway musical Here Lies Love, about the life of Imelda Marcos. Now, it was the first all-Filipino cast on Broadway. You actually sang for the Marcoses when you were a child. And 40 years later, you're in a musical about them, playing Aurora Aquino, the mother of politician Ninoy Aquino, who was assassinated in 1983. I think you've described it as like slamming into history. Tell me about that.
For me, it was like, we're doing this in New York. I don't think we're necessarily offending anybody per se. And folks will come away from the show the way they'll come away from any show, whatever their feelings are. We are going to offer the truth, all of which has been extensively researched and looked at. All of the stuff that we are presenting can be proved, which was important to all of us. As for me slamming into my own history, I remember being 12 and seeing photographs everywhere of Ninoy Aquino's bloodied face as he was on the funeral procession. His mother, Aurora, the role I got to play, was the one who decided that he would not be prepared for burial. We will show our people what he looked like. We will show what was done to him. It included keeping him in the clothes that he wore on the flight. So bloodied, the face uncovered by makeup, which is customary for a funeral or a wake. Nope. Barefaced, bloodied, bruised. And I think the quote is, we will show what they did to him. And I was like, that's intense. And for a mother to be so protective over how her child was going to be seen and perceived. Yeah, to this day, he is still seen as a hero. The quote was, the Filipino is worth dying for. And he proved it.
It must have been such a special show to be part of. What was opening night like?
It was electric. It was an entire group of people in the cast and many of us in the production team who were of Filipino descent. All of us were really leaning into our Filipino-ness so much more, I think, than we normally do on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I wear the Philippines on my face. It's wherever I go, that's who I am. I felt, this is the one show where I get to play who I am. I am leaning into this. So even
tell me about leaning in.
When it means that it's not just the face. It's the outfit. It's the language. It's really representing the best of yourself and your country on the biggest stage in the world. But two, you come face to face with some of our more painful history in a safe environment where you can be free to feel all of your feelings, whatever that might mean for that individual person.
I think we better have some more music there. What's your next selection?
Oh, this is a good one, and one that always makes me cry. This is Baby Mine from Dumbo, originally sung by Betty Noyes. And it's like, I have had to sing this in concert. And I always have to give myself extra time to prepare in order to get used to it, because it's this gorgeous song from a mother to her child. And it's just so emotional and hits right at the center of the heart. It's one of the most gorgeous pieces of music ever produced for a Disney film.
Baby Mine, Betty Noyes, from the soundtrack to Dumbo. So many firsts for you, Leah. And one very pleasing one that I have to ask you about is your role as a Disney legend. In 1992, you became a Disney princess for the first time, providing the singing voice for Princess Jasmine from Aladdin. Mm-hmm. And then in 1998, you did it again as the singing voice of Mulan, which you've done twice. Now, you are the only person to be a double Disney princess. Does this come with perks? Do you get the free rides on roller coasters and stuff like that?
I get to go to the park for free. I get to go to, with the exception of the parks in Japan, I can go to any Disneyland.
Do you have to like sing to get in or do you get a little pass?
I've already done my singing. I can just get a pass now. So my kid does not know what it's like to be in a long line at Disneyland.
There's got to be some benefits to being a double princess.
I mean,
come on.
You know, there's got to be a perk. And there it is. It's a lifetime perk.
We're about to cast you away to a solitary life on the desert island. Do you enjoy your time alone?
I actually do. I can entertain myself. I'm pretty good at a solitary existence, if need be.
How do you think your survival skills are?
Not good. Definitely nowhere near being able to spear a fish. Maybe if I spent enough time on the island, sure.
And what sort of island are you imagining?
Hopefully somewhere where the weather is not so unpredictable. I come from a country where there are so many typhoons in a year that you have to alphabetize them. So I'd like to not be in a place like that, as much as I love the Philippines.
Leia, one more track before we send you off as a castaway. Your eighth choice today, what's it going to be?
My eighth choice is Snooze by August D, who is another member of BTS. But this is his alter ego. He normally goes by Suga. So this is August D, which features Ryuichi Sakamoto and a vocalist named Woo Sung. And he wrote it, I believe, as something that he wants to say to other young people who are following in his footsteps as an artist who is now more established and older, talking to younger artists who are saying, this is hard, what do I do? And he then says, yeah, this can get difficult, but it will be okay. And there is a line in the song where over and over again, he repeats, everything will be okay.
August D and Snooze featuring Ryuichi Sakamoto and Woo Sung. Leia Salonga, I'm going to cast you away to your desert island now. I'll give you the books, the Bible, the complete works of Shakespeare, and another book of your choice. What would you like?
The Complete Far Side by Gary Larson.
Oh, love The Far Side. So this is cartoons.
You have just basically explained why. It's just how he looks at life. It's silly and ludicrous and absolutely perfect. And you need to have a laugh.
You can also have a luxury item. What will that be?
It's a toss-up between a Moka coffee percolator, which I use every day to make my coffee at home, or a typewriter, because I like journaling and I like, and in high school and for part of college, I used a typewriter. There's something about hearing the keys as they hit the carriage as you're, you know, getting your thoughts out or writing a term paper.
You can only have one. Which is it going to be?
I'll have the typewriter, I think.
And what disc would you save from the waves above all others?
I'd save Snooze by August D. If only for the line, everything will be okay.
Leia Salonga, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you for having me.
Hello. I hope that Leia is happy on her island with her typewriter for company. We've cast away so many singers over the years, including Leia's heroine, Dame Julie Andrews. You can hear Julie's programme if you search through our Desert Island Discs programme archive or on BBC Sounds. And you'll also find other luminaries from the world of musicals, like Stephen Sondheim, Andrew Lloyd Webber, Cameron McIntosh, Sonia Friedman and Lin-Manuel Miranda. The studio manager for today's programme was Jackie Marjoram. The assistant producer was Tim Bano, and the producer was Sarah Taylor. The series editor is John Gowdy. Join me next time when I'm talking to the broadcaster, Peter White, who's been presenting Radio 4's In Touch since 1974, almost half a century.
From BBC Radio 4, life can be unexpected.
It was big. This was not a wind, this was not a storm, this was a tsunami.
But when confronted with change, humans are remarkably resilient.
I knew in that moment, as I fell to the ground, that I would recover more.
I'm Dr. Sian Williams, psychologist and presenter of Life Changing, the programme that speaks to people whose worlds have been flipped upside down and transformed in a moment.
If I had to live my life again, would I ever want to go through what I went through? There's a very simple answer to that. I would go through it again.
Subscribe to Life Changing on BBC Sounds.